And we're off in the 100-yard freestyle. Should be a very fast meet with the defending champion swimming in lane six.
In February, Leah Thomas of the University of Pennsylvania dominated the Ivy League Swimming Championships, winning four titles, including the 100-yard freestyle.
Leah won a lot. She set pool records. She set a couple meet records. She was very, very strong in the pool, winning the 100, the 200, and the 500 freestyle races.
This is Robert Sanchez, the journalist who wrote our cover story about Leah Thomas and spent time with her to discuss her extraordinary journey as a transgender swimmer and the ensuing controversy that's been covered by the sports and news media alike.
A swimmer for the University of Pennsylvania is getting a lot of pushback. 22-year-old Leah Thomas is transgender.
By controversy surrounding University of Pennsylvania transgender swimmer Leah Thomas, who is now breaking women's records.
But in a new article, Sports Illustrated calls the college senior the most controversial athlete in America.
Thomas edging ahead there in lane five. Leah Thomas to the wall first at 47.63 seconds. And that is a new Ivy League meet record.
She wins the race, she sets the record, and she points up into the sky. She ends up hugging Isaac Hennig, the trans swimmer from Yale who's transitioning. I think it's natural to touch the wall first, look back at the time, and if you're happy with that time, celebrate a little bit. It was a big meet for Penn. It was a big meet for her. And I think she let loose a little bit. And she was very, very excited.
All right, let's go back a little bit. Tell us about Leah's background. Where was she born?
She grew up in Austin, Texas.
I really just fell in love with being in the water. And in Texas, you're swimming outside. And so you're going to school, you've got goggle tan and cap tan, and everybody's asking, why do you have that? And you're like, I'm a swimmer.
She initially started as a breaststroker. When she reaches high school, she really realizes if she's able to swim long distance freestyle events, that's generally the quicker way into some of the top meets. They're very demanding, they're punishing, they're very, very tough. Not a lot of kids can hang. So she was able to very quickly get into that and really start dominating her competition there, getting looks from some of the top collegiate programs in the nation and really, really doing well.
Leah's obviously swimming extremely well. She realizes she's talented. How does she make it to Philadelphia?
Her brother Wes had swum for head coach Mike Schnurr. Leah and her parents and Wes had felt very, very comfortable with Schnurr, the program he built at the University of Pennsylvania, and the kind of support that he really gave his swimmers over the years. The family felt comfortable with, obviously, the education. That's a life-changing education. And it felt like a very safe and welcoming environment because, you know, I'm a parent too, and you're looking for places where your kids are going to fit in and they're going to do well and they're going to feel supported. And clearly, Bob and Carrie Thomas felt that for Leah going to school there and started out really gangbusters on the men's team there and did extraordinarily well.
We're also going to bring in Julie Kliegman for this conversation. Julie writes about queer athletes and issues for Sports Illustrated. Julie, there was a time in Leah's life when she said she started to feel less comfortable and she didn't feel like she fit in her own body. There's actually a term for this called gender dysphoria. Could you explain that for us?
Sure. Gender dysphoria is a documented condition by psychologists and psychiatrists. What it entails is not feeling comfortable in your own skin. Maybe having a body part or several body parts that are coded as more masculine or more feminine that you don't feel comfortable with. It's something that a lot of trans people feel, but to different degrees and in different ways. For those who experience it, it's this big, persistent, potentially harmful issue.
I was, at that time, sophomore swimming, far more focused on relieving the gender dysphoria I had been feeling. That was crippling. It took basically all my energy to get out of bed most days. And some days I didn't get out of bed, and some days I wouldn't go to class because of the dysphoria and the sort of depression it caused.
In 2019, Leah meets with counseling and psychological services at Penn, and they hear her story and they tell her, hey, you have access to this treatment called hormone replacement therapy, or HRT. Julie, what is HRT? How does it work? What does it do?
Yeah, hormone replacement therapy is suppressing testosterone development, and it boosts estrogen, you know, the more quote unquote female hormone. So with someone who's transgender, that process can alleviate gender dysphoria and make them feel okay in their own skin.
When I started HRT, I did that knowing and accepting that I might not swim again. And I'd wait that to be worth it in my mind. The sophomore year is when I started hormone replacement therapy, which for me was estrogen and a testosterone blocker. And that was incredibly helpful, really pretty quickly, which surprised me even. I'd read a lot about HRT and people's experiences on it, but the sort of mental relief that it gave me was really pretty quick and quite substantial.
And as the HRT blocks your testosterone, your athletic ability is also reduced, at least in the eyes of the NCAA.
I mean, you're looking like beyond a decade when the NCAA really started looking at this issue of particularly trans female athletes coming into collegiate sports. Last year and this year, it really kind of came to a head with Leah. Leah was kind of the push in all of this, where previously we had 1 year of testing testosterone. You had to be on HRT for a year. A full year has to be documented. Your university has to, you know, file all the paperwork. The athlete has to show all this stuff. So that's what the rule was. What you saw was in January, these rules kind of start shifting a little bit. And then you essentially had the NCAA punting this to the governing boards in the United States that are overseeing individual sports. And in this case, they really punted it to USA Swimming. That's when you started seeing some of the other rule changes. You have to show that you've been undergoing HRT for 36 months before you can even apply to swim in this different category for yourself. So a lot of this changed, and Leah, as of NCAAs, would only have 34 months of HRT. So she would have missed that window by 2 months. So the NCAA came back and basically said, okay, yeah, we'll adopt these, but we're going to go incrementally here. Now you have the NCAA saying through a subcommittee that she will be able to swim. But it's just been handled so strangely in so many different ways where there's just been so much confusion.
Julie, how does the NCAA's decision to punt on trans policy complicate matters?
It complicates matters a lot. It creates the sort of patchwork of experiences in the NCAA where technically, if you're a two-sport athlete now, you can be considered a woman in one sport and a man in another sport. In my opinion, it was not the smartest move to pass responsibility to these governing bodies, because now you have all these questions it raises about who's going to oversee testing, who's going to be tested and when and why. So it just creates a mess.
Yeah, on the point of testing, no matter who handles the oversight, it seems that at the end of the day, somebody will be measuring testosterone. Is that enough to determine someone's athletic advantage?
Absolutely not. There are still so many open questions around the science of transgender athletes and what makes someone a good athlete. It's really clear to me that there are many factors other than testosterone, because women and men, like not just transgender people, but cisgender people too, have different levels of hormones all the time, and they compete against each other. So it's really not the end all be all that we like to think testosterone is.
So Robert, not everybody was totally on board with Leah. Tell us about the anonymous letter.
There have been several now that have been sent out initially by Penn parents who basically said that something needed to be done to stop Leah from swimming within the women's category. And then there have been subsequent meetings, and then Penn swimmers in February had sent out a letter with 16 teammates, basically saying that they did not support Leah swimming against them, competing with them, and didn't think that it was fair, that it was right, and that something should be done. So this has been something that's been going on for pretty much the entire swim season.
Yeah, there's another group of interested parties here. Tell us about the Women's Sports Policy Working Group. Who are they? What do they do?
So it's led by a couple of former Olympians, including a couple of Olympic swimmers, and they want to find a middle ground, or at least that's what they purport to want to find in terms of the trans athlete debate. So the pushback is there is an unfair aspect of her competing in the women's division. She's taking away spots and opportunities from other female athletes. The pushback is also about, quote unquote, protecting Title IX. Really, their suggested policies and opinions are quite harmful toward trans athletes. Some affiliated with that group have said, for example, that there should be a separate category where transgender athletes compete against each other instead of integrating them with cisgender athletes, i.e. most of the population.
What happens to trans kids when their gender identities are affirmed by those around them, and what happens when they aren't?
When trans kids' identities are affirmed, they do better in school. They're less likely to be depressed or suicidal. A 2020 study showed that transgender non-binary youth who report experiencing discrimination based on their gender had more than double the odds of attempting suicide in the past year compared with those who did not experience discrimination based on their gender identity. They're growing up hearing what we have to say about Leah Thomas. Those opinions matter. You know, they take to heart our criticism and our praise.
Leah Thomas said that HRT and the transition she's made literally saved her life, which is such a powerful thing to say and share. Is that life and death component of the conversation misunderstood or maybe not talked about enough?
It's definitely not talked about enough. And I think when it is, we can risk sounding dramatic about it or make it sound like hyperbole. But it is the truth. I just want to cite a Trevor Project statistic. More than half of transgender and non-binary youth seriously considered suicide in the past year, and one in five actually attempted suicide. This is what I think a lot of lawmakers forget, that it is life and death.
Yeah, you bring up the lawmakers, which is an important point. I'm curious about the anti-trans laws that have been proposed around the country, including laws banning gender-affirming care and banning trans youth from sports. We'll get into some specifics, but in general, how successful have these efforts been?
Yeah, so at least 11 states between 2020 and today have passed laws banning trans kids from competing in sports that align with their gender identity. Most of those states ban only trans girls and women from competing, but some of them have banned trans boys and men too. And we've seen a number of other states propose laws like this. So it's something that is very much still evolving. The country is still deciding how to treat this issue, and lawmakers are kind of testing the waters with how popular they seem to be. But they've caught on a lot more than, for example, the bathroom bans of a few years ago have. So there's some kind of frightening, to be honest, progress there. And then, of course, as you mentioned, there are the laws banning gender-affirming care. Now, we haven't seen as many of those enacted yet, but they're on the way, too.
So the governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, recently directed Family and Protective Services to investigate trans children. He wants that department to prosecute their parents as child abusers, and he has also directed teachers, doctors, and caregivers to report trans students. That's obviously an extremely aggressive position. I'm wondering what you made of that when you heard about this.
Honestly, it's hard to put into words how horrific it is, because allowing kids to have gender-affirming care is not child abuse. It's the opposite of child abuse. It's letting your child live. It's letting them live authentically, live happily. It's giving them a fair chance at life.
There's a young golfer in Tennessee named Luke Escovel. Who is he, and how does his story relate to everything we've been discussing?
So Luke is a 14-year-old boy, a trans boy, from outside of Knoxville, Tennessee, and he wants to play golf. He loves golf, and played it with his dad growing up. He played it a little bit when he was still presenting as female on the girls' team. And he relates to all we're talking about because he is now banned by the state of Tennessee from playing on publicly funded boys and men's sports teams.
Yeah, so help me understand this here, because the surface argument for keeping Leah Thomas out of the pool is that it's unfair to the rest of her competitors, that she has an unfair advantage somehow. So what's the argument for keeping Luke off the golf course? Because it seems to me on the surface that the cruelty is the point here.
I think you're exactly right. The weight of the arguments of these anti-trans legislators kind of collapses under the point of Luke, because this isn't about women's sports. He's a man, so you can't try to claim this is about protecting Title IX. So this really just shows that banning everyone from public life is the point, not quote unquote protecting women's sports.
So when we're telling the story of Leah and Luke, we're talking about them sort of in the abstract as topics and controversies. Why do you think that sometimes we miss the people behind it?
Sports get people really emotional and fired up, and we get into all sorts of talks about the fairness and the science. But Leah and Luke are just people. You might be trans yourself. You might have a friend who's trans or a family member or a coworker, and you don't always know, right? So it's kind of helpful if you can just reframe it as thinking about this person is first and foremost just a person. Here are their likes and dislikes. Here are their strengths and their flaws. I think that's key to this whole debate. When legislators are confronted with the humans at the heart of it, I think it's hard for them to keep up their arguments.
So you obviously spent time with Leah. On a personal level, how is she handling all of this?
I think she kind of puts the blinders on. She's really asked that her friends and her family just focus straight ahead, focus on her swim season with Penn and now with NCAAs. Once she started swimming really well, she started getting more and more messages basically saying that you shouldn't be swimming with women and everything you can imagine that would surround that, that she had to necessarily kind of disconnect from that, from parts of the outside world. She felt like a lot of people were against her, but she really focused on the fact that she had her coach's support. Some of the teammates had supported her. She had parents who had come up to her after some meets, give her a hug and say that, hey, we support you, Leah, and what you're doing here. And I know that was extraordinarily meaningful for her. It wasn't easy, and it has not been easy, and it will not be easy. But I think she's just put the blinders on and said, I'm focusing on swimming here, and the rest of the stuff, I can focus on that once she's out of the pool.
So she's already swimming at the highest level in college. She's one of the best swimmers in college. The next level after that, obviously, is the Olympics. Is it possible we'll see her swim in the Olympics one day?
She certainly left the door open for that. She had talked to me a lot, pretty extensively, about swimming at Olympic trials. That's such a top of the mountain kind of thing for any competitive swimmer. It's just such a tremendous moment in a swimmer's life. And for her, that was something she really wanted to get to, was trials, to be able to swim there. And if she continues on the pace that she's going, clearly she could be swimming as one of the top long distance freestylers in the nation next to someone like Katie Ledecky.
Competing at Olympic trials has been a goal of mine for a very, very long time. I don't know exactly what the future of my swimming may look like after this year, but I love the sport and I want to swim and compete as who I am.
She has the potential to have a huge impact. She has the potential to show transgender kids that they are worthy, that they can compete, that they deserve to compete, that they can succeed, that they can win. That's not a weight that Leah should have to bear, but this is the situation we're in where she's the most prominent transgender athlete right now to speak of. And so all this weight, unfortunately, is on her shoulders. Hopefully she sees the impact that it can have and already is having. Leah's just a person who wants to swim. She's a good athlete. Why shouldn't she be allowed the opportunity to compete like everyone else? Why is that so hard to accept?
Julie Kliegman is Sports Illustrated's copy chief, who often writes about queer issues in sports for SI. Robert Sanchez wrote the cover story for SI about Leah Thomas. We'll have a link in our show notes.